going to be that kind of show, folks. Welcome, welcome, legions, once again to the What You've Been Watching podcast. I am your host, the marvelous Mike Dudley, followed as always by my co-host, cohort, and youngest brother.
MD3 Marcus Dudley checking in on a YOU. What is going on out there in podcast land? We are broadcasting live from the Lakeside Studios of the What You Been Watching Studios, right here somewhere between Tallahassee and Havana, would you say? You know,
thereabouts,
or Havana? As let me yeah, go and take two with Havana. You know, how are you today, though, man?
I am good, man. Make a new tracks on the work front.
Exquisite.
Yeah. Got brought back to my old gig with the old crew that I like, so that's always going to be fun.
Oh, nice. Congratulations,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, yeah. I'm super, yeah. I joked to my boss. I was like, man, what are you working on, like the Kiss reunion tour? You getting all the original band members back together for one last go around? He's like, yeah, kind of something like that, you know.
Damn, well, that's good, man.
We make good music together. I was like, we put on a good show. I don't know if we make good music.
Yeah. Well, good for you, man. That's good. That's good. That's why you don't burn bridges, ladies and gentlemen.
Exactly, exactly.
You know, the bridge we will never burn is that of our opening intro music. Ketsa.
That's right.
Always bright. Thank you so much for the lovely intro.
Once we get your name right, we will never burn that bridge.
Yeah, ever again. We're so sorry. Also, shout out to Mr. A1 for the lovely intro music you hear.
Interlude music.
Oh, what did I say? Interlude music. Yep. Sorry. Our lovely, all the custom beats that you hear that are not our opening song done by Mr. Flavorful himself, Mr. A1. You can find him at a1reality.music@gmail.com. Telling you, if you need any kind of custom things, you'd be surprised by the breadth. Is that the word? Breadth of knowledge?
The breadth, yeah.
Yes, breadth of knowledge in which he can bring to your custom beats, games. The man is a quadruple threat. He sings, he raps, he does beats, he dances. Oh, that's already four. We got a fifth. What else does he do, Michael? A Cinco threat.
I heard he does freelance tattoo removal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard that, too. I heard that, too.
I mean, it's mostly just him with, like, a potato peeler and, like, a bunch of Vicodin. But, you know,
yeah,
the tattoo's gone.
Hey, the tattoo is gone. That's what that is. Shout out to that. And the lovely banner. You can see that at the MKD Art.
MK Dudley Art.
MK Dudley Art. That's right. That's right. And where can they find us, my brother?
They can find us online at facebook.com/Dudley Bros Podcast. You can also find us on that IG at What You've Been Watching. And they can find us at... What's the email?
Whatcha been watching podcast at gmail.com. Slide in the DMs on the Instagram or the Facebook, or you can write us in again at the email, whatcha been watching podcast at gmail.com.
That's right.
We switched our orders up. Usually we go back and forth on that, so we tried something new. We got about a C grade on that.
That's okay.
You know what? We got through it.
You got to keep it fresh. You can't, you know,
right.
You can't fuck the same way every night.
All right. Right. There you go. So other than the work, what's been going on, man? Been good? Life treating you well?
Well, that's three very separate questions right there.
Oh, yes, it is. So let's start on the top then. Let's start at the top.
Yeah, besides work, man, just running around with these damn children trying to, you know, be the best adult figure. I hesitate to say stepdad or what have you, but, you know.
I know what you mean. Trust me.
You know, because that denotes responsibility, and we all know I'm not about that life.
Yeah, you say that. Yet you're in it.
Well,
waist deep, big dog.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. But yeah, man, other than that, just trying to do new activities. Me and the lovely Liz decided we're going to try and take our hand at Bob Ross painting.
Oh, really?
So yeah. We made a trip out to the art store the other day and got canvases and brushes and tubes of paint and all the accoutrements.
Man.
Yeah, yeah.
Good for you, man. To try to, you know. I know you're the artistic type. This whole podcast birthed because we were like, we have no way to express ourselves artistically. What do?
I want to die because I can't express myself.
Yeah, pretty much. So good for you, man. Yeah, no, that's why, and, you know, it's packed away now. That's why I got a drum set and things like that. You know, you got to express yourself through some medium outside of just bumping your gums with me about shit.
Yeah,
you're like,
is that
one movie?
But, yeah. I'm trying to get back into writing, but it's so hard, especially because I've been out of it for so long.
Tell
you know,
me,
it's one of those, like, I don't know. I went back the other night and started looking through some of the old stuff that I had started and never really completed because that's just my writing style is I'll start 10,000 writing things and then get bored with them or hate them or whatever and just never finish them. And usually what I'll do is if I go back and read something and I hate it, I delete it. It's gone forever. And so last night I didn't do, or last week I didn't do that. I actually made a folder called, you know, stuff in the works, just so it's not, you know, like garbage or labeled, you know, don't ever touch this. Please don't look here. I'll be embarrassed. I'll die. But yeah, just made it, try to put a positive spin on it, and you know, like, you know, under construction. This is something that I'm working on. So trying to go back and revisit some of those and hack them out and take out all the chuffa and all the weird hacky shit that I thought was so brilliant at the time.
Yeah, that happens sometimes, man. I definitely feel you on that, man. As you know, I used to be involved with music all the time. I was constantly around it. It was the one thing I thought, no matter what I did in life, that I would never be away from. And surely enough, man, life took me in a direction where I don't do it. And the last time I tried to write a rap, a poem, a song, it felt so phoned in.
Oh, yeah.
Authenticity, especially, well, in raps, I'll say, authenticity is so important to me, at least.
I was going
to
say,
That's why I don't mess with a lot of new music. It's just, it's all the same subject materials. Like, everybody's got shooters. Everybody's got a payroll. Everybody's...
Right.
Effing on your bitch or what? It's the same redundant stuff, and it's like there's zero originality or authenticity to it. Even if you're living like this, okay, like the studio just happened to find 130 people that
right
all got the same life
story. That all got that lean.
Yeah, it's like, all right, man. So there's a couple people out there I still rock with. Shout out to Coast Contra. Shout out to Norman Sapp.
But even then, those are like lyricists. They do wordplay. They they weave a tapestry, you know, vocally or lyrically, you know, as opposed to just like skirt.
Yeah, no, pretty much the improvs have taken over. And like I said, if you like that kind of thing, that's good, you know, enjoy it. But I personally don't. And so I say all that to say, like, when I do try to go back and write anything, a chorus, a song, a poem, it all feels so forced and phony. And I've always been my toughest critic. Sure. But I also used to have the ability to trash an entire thing, and I'll just take out the cadence of the way I said something or the melody of how I said something and be like, I like this aspect of it. This will find new light. And I'd write a whole new feature just off of that.
There you go.
I don't do it anymore. So rather I talk about movies and slide in video games where I
can
bitch about the Eagles and the Seminoles.
It's going to feel hacky and it's going to feel phoned in because, like, you're forcing yourself to do it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that – how do I put this? It's like the spark hasn't caught fire yet, you know? You're fanning it. You're trying to work it into a roaring frenzy and bring that passion back. And it may never, you know, be the bonfire of passion that it once was. But, like, just keep fanning it, man. Just keep, you know, even if it's, you know – cool embers, and that's, you know, how you get your jollies and you know, just writing stuff just for you. That's fine, man. Do it.
That's why we do a podcast just for us. For everybody that listens, no, that was good life to live by, and I don't want to gloss over it, but that was good advice, man. Just for anybody that's thinking about starting something or that used to do something, man, just do it. This whole podcast, like, if you go back to listen to episode one, it is not good. We still don't really know what we're doing.
It's episode 72. I'd argue it's still not
good. No, that's what I was saying. We still don't really know what we're doing. We certainly have a lot more practice at it, though.
Sure.
You know, we're getting closer to where we want to be. But, man, like, this whole idea sprung out of it. I'm not trying to, you know, incriminate Michael here. We've kind of told the story on the air before, but... don't release it. And it's just like, who cares, man? Like, for us, and we're just going to get better. And people want to see these humble beginnings. So,
but I mean, like, I'm such a perfectionist. Like, even to this day, I can't put something out there for other people to see until I'm completely happy with it. And it's got to be perfect. You know what I mean? Like, there can't be any flaws. And of course, I'm going to be my own worst critic, and I see all the flaws all the time, all the cracks, all the, like, and so it's part of my learning process has been to just, like, learn to let that go and sort of, like, it may not be perfect, but it is what it is, and just put it out there and see how people react, and, like, just use that, you know, instead of being afraid of the criticism, welcome the, like, not even the admiration, but just the, like, just the attaboy of it, you know, like, oh, that's pretty cool, dude, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. Shout out, I'm going to, hopefully, we can take this out, I'll give him a call afterwards, but, you know, our good friend Glenn, a.k.a. DJ Ozar.
That's right.
I'll tune in. I'll just click on. I don't do it as much as I would, as I should be doing it, to be honest with you. But I'll click in his music just to hear some tracks, just to get the numbers up, do whatever. Sure. Like some of it I've actually enjoyed. But like, man, I actually get inspired just knowing that he still is putting music out.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So you don't really know, man. Your journey sometimes. It's like I see other. Rarely do I see other people work out that I'm like, oh, I want to do that. But there are a couple people in my friendship list that I see posting videos of them getting, seeing real progress, and it's like, damn. Kind of inspirational. You live a dope life. At least you presented it.
Right.
So, anyways, but enough of that. The moral of that story is just don't lose your dinosaur.
Ah, there it is. No, there it is.
That was not really the that's more. That's more about losing your inner child. But yeah, which we talked about on the Lego episode, which was a good episode, by the mm-hmm. way. I enjoyed that. Enjoyed our movie trivia, Moxie. I'm still heartbroken I lost.
Oh, yeah.
That was tough competition, though.
That was. And I think that was actually the first time that we kind of had geared a lot of the categories more for the other person. You know what I mean? Like, in previous seasons, it's been just a lot more like potpourri or general movie knowledge. I think these ones were like, I had questions that were specifically targeted towards you, and you had ones that were like, definitely directed towards like my repertoire or my, like, you know, of movie knowledge.
Absolutely. I mean, the point of it is, I mean, there is got to be just some random stuff.
Sure.
But the goal, if you ever want to play movie trivia Moxie at home, the goal is you find a partner, multiple partners, whatever. That's poly.
Yeah, I Moxie. Recommend multiple partners.
That is called poly movie trivia Moxie. yeah. But no, it's fine, whomever you want, whoever wants to play along with you. And either they can give you a subject, hey, quiz me on this, or if you know that person well enough, you're like, I see you watching The Office all the time.
Right.
Like, let's test that movie trivia. Let's find out, test the metal of your movie trivia, Moxie.
That's right.
And so you try to find subjects that you think the other person knows something about. And sometimes there's some hard-hitting questions. You're like, damn, I know what you're talking about, but I don't know the answer.
Right. Or like, I know that movie so well that I should know the answer to that question, and I just don't.
Some of them are just things that we've mentioned on the podcast before.
That's where I get tripped up, because...
Yeah, not like, I mean, the one I had the most fun with was when, on the second movie Trivia Moxie we did, where I asked you the same questions that you got wrong.
I remember, yes.
That was a lot of fun for me. just watching you squirm. They were fair game, though. They were fair questions.
I mean... You asked me the same questions twice. I mean, like, how much easier should it have been?
Yeah. But, I mean, because Michael, if we really wanted to win, Michael would just come to me with, like, random 1980s wrestling trivia. And it's like, dude, I don't know. I'm going to guess Hulk Hogan. Or, like, if I get it, it's not because I know it. It's because it's a lucky guess.
Right.
And it's kind of fun to watch somebody squirm, but it's also, I'm here to test your movie trivia, Moxie.
That's
right. If anybody wants to know the secret on how to play along at home, that's how you do it, so... Patent pending. That would be a card.
What was your favorite
game.
Category that I gave to you?
I always hate the Seagull, or Katie Seagull. I always hate those, but I also appreciate the fact that you do them because they're fair. Even if it's shit that I don't know, I have a 1 in 3 chance of getting it.
Sure.
So I feel like it's in bounds, even though I just hate it for some reason. I just don't fare well, which I actually did that round. But I always like that. The 1996 one was weird, just because it was. Like, why 96? You could have picked 86, which is the birth year, but you're like, nope, 1996. Or just, I thought that there was a movie that I liked that came out in 96.
Nope, just 96 was a good year, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I sometimes get tickled at the subject lines that we come up with. The movie taglines are always fun.
Yeah.
Which, you know, those are all movies that we had mentioned on the podcast. That was always fun. I'm trying to think last week what the subjects were, though. That I appreciated. I guess it's a million times away now.
There we go. Right. I had the SNL High Low.
Oh, yeah. I did not do well at that one. I did not do very well at that. I just think they all bomb. Like, all the movies I like bomb. I'm like, it's lower. I mean,
long story short, when it comes to SNL movies, there's two that did really, really well. And then, yes, the rest of them pretty much bombed.
Yeah. And even Tommy Boy wasn't based off a skit. But it's just like, hey, we're going to roll... camera on Chris Farley and David Spade, them doing their thing,
right.
And hey, that works. So technically an SNL movie, but also not really.
I mean, you know, kissing cousins.
Yeah. Now, what was your favorite subject, though?
I do not remember because I don't listen to the podcast.
Oh, I see. You should.
No, what was the category you gave me? Let's see. You had I can tell you the one that I hated the most because I should have gotten it and I didn't was the Go Big Red category.
No, you did well in that one.
Did I?
Yeah, which, by the way, we've exhausted that category until more alumnus from Leon High come out.
See, I'm you know who I thought you were going to put on there and you didn't?
Who?
Burt Reynolds.
No, no, he's Florida State. He's not. There could be more. Don't worry. There was only five questions for each of them.
Okay.
The Leon one, though, that was Go Big Red. Mm-hmm. That category is officially exhausted and retired. Unless you just spin it. If you haven't noticed the way that we'll ask a question, we'll just loosely tie it to something. We'll be like, Faye Dunaway went to Leon High School. And then we'll be like, what movie was she?
Right.
You can even spin it and be like, in 1986, she was in a movie with this person. What was that movie called? And it really has nothing to do with
Leon whatsoever. See, 1986, Faye Dunaway, that would have been, ooh.
Who knows?
That's after Fried Green Tomatoes.
I don't even know if this movie exists, Michael. I didn't even say somebody.
I got to feel like it's some sort of like geriatric rom-com with Jack Nicholson or
probably
Walter Matthau or Jack Lemmon.
Yeah, probably.
I would watch that porn.
I would watch. But yeah, no, that I was surprised you did not get the Frylock one about T-Pain playing Frylock.
And I should have. I should have absolutely put the Adult Swim T-Pain connection together. And
which, shout out to the Freaknik the musical. If you ever wonder, like, T-Pain lives a pretty awesome life. He's done a musical cartoon on Adult Swim many years ago. Find it on YouTube. Freaknik the musical. Shout out to T-Pain.
Well, and now he's making like $200,000 a year just doing Twitch streams.
He kind of just does what he wants. He does Twitch streams. He has Nappy Boy Gaming, which is like his video game company.
Well, but he also sponsors an actual like video game team, like a competitive player team.
Yeah. Nappy Boy Gaming. Yeah, it's Nappy Boy Gaming. He also has he does drift racing now.
What?
Yeah, so he's got Nappy Boy Auto, and yeah, he's the man. He lives his best life.
It must be nice just to have enough money and free time to be like, what new job do I want to be today? Like, just being like a kindergartner, like, I want to be an astronaut, fireman, racer, race car,
he's
policeman.
He's almost in that sweet spot like Snoop Dogg. Snoop Dogg just gets paid to be Snoop Dogg. Everything he does, it's like, oh yeah, let's get Snoop Dogg on there. Oh, do we need to act? Nah, just be Snoop.
Yeah.
He's getting close to that sweet spot.
Hey, Snoop, you want to help sell Coronas? For shizzle, my nizzle.
Yeah, we'll say that. Roll camera, cut.
Done. Exactly.
Yeah, pretty sweet spot there.
Now, we'll be there one day, Marcus.
Yeah, we'll get there, my friend.
It'll be you, me, T-Pain, and Snoop Dogg all sitting around.
Yeah, for real.
You sober as fuck and me just being like, you're amazing.
I might have to smoke one with Snoop Dogg, to be honest with you.
You goddamn better.
Yeah, I might need to smoke one.
I love you, but if you don't break sobriety for Snoop Dogg, I will be mad at you.
I wouldn't last long because I haven't smoked marijuana in a very long time. So
It's Snoop Dogg. I wouldn't last long either.
Yeah, I'd take two hits and be like, I'm done. Like, done. I'm going home and I think, yeah, I have aliens inside my chest. But all that being said, we have devolved into something that we don't usually do. But we're just kind of catching up. So all that being said, my brother, the reason why people tune in year in, year out, week in, week out. My brother, the people need to know what you've been watching.
My man, I have been a little light in the movies recently just because I've had a lot of plates spinning. But I did finish watching the Amazon series, The Boys.
Ah, I have seen season one and two, and I like those. So what'd you think about it?
Let me see. I really like season one. That was pretty strong. Season
really
two, that was the one with Stormfront?
Yes. Yes.
Okay,
right. Where they are into the eugenics and stuff. And
Yes.
Pretty messed up.
I'm trying to keep it spoiler-free, but yeah, if you haven't seen season two of The Boys, it's pretty
two
awesome.
Two was, yeah, four
three,
just came out.
Three was a little kind of off the walls. It's not bad, but it's definitely, I think, the most unlike the other seasons.
That's the one with Soldier Boy?
Yeah. Which Jensen Ackles playing, I mean, imagine Captain America, but fueled by methamphetamines and like 1950s propaganda.
Yeah.
I mean, a woman's place is in the kitchen and, you know, drinking Jack Daniels before going off in the war and Why Are the Coloreds Sitting in the Same Booth as Me kind of thing.
Wow, yeah, that type. Yeah, that show doesn't really tread lightly when it comes to stuff like that, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird... anyway, season four, I think, is a little bit more on track. It definitely is not making any subtle jabs at the far right and conservative evangelical movement. Like, it's... That whole movement is pretty much painted as the villain of the series. In as much as they are fighting, you know, superheroes or whatever, the overarching theme is that, like, the villain superheroes are leaning into the alt-right, super Christian, you know, Christian nationalism kind of thing. So, not pulling any punches. So it's
they often don't. Subtlety's not really their strong suit on The Boys, whether it be in the comic book or, which they've taken some massive liberties from the comic book, but it's all good. The show works. The show works. Really, I could watch Carl Urban so good in that show as Billy Butcher.
His accent. I don't know if he's doing a great accent or a bad accent, but I love that accent. Like, it's so, like, he's, the dude is from, I want to say New Zealand, maybe Australia. I think he's New Zealand.
I don't know.
But he's doing a British Cockney, like, gravelly Cockney, like, oi, what's this shit? Like, tell me, bruv, what we gonna do here about this here situation? Like, that,
he's,
like,
awesome.
But I don't know if it's, I don't know if that accent I just did is as good as he's doing or way worse, but it's amazing. I could listen to him do that accent all goddamn night.
He's definitely the star of the show. He's very good in that role. I like
all him. He's got to do is just say some, like, clever 80s comeback and just smirk at the camera, and I'm like, well, they got me for the next season.
He says the C word a lot as well. It's
right.
Yeah, rhymes with punt. But no, he says that a lot. Yeah. But no, I like that. Like I said, I only saw season one and two, and then I just kind of, again, there's just so much content. I just probably went down some other rabbit hole waiting for it, and then I just haven't gotten back. But I kind of keep up with it a little bit just because of the, I guess my algorithm knows that I'm a comic book fan and probably have seen The Boys, so I kind of get into some of it. I like how The Deep is an ongoing just punchline.
Oh, he is hysterical. Like, from the jump, he's not a good guy. I mean, like, long story short, he basically tries...
None of them are.
Yeah. The whole point of the series is, what if all of the world's favorite superheroes were all selfish, anxious assholes?
Yeah. The Boys, the comic book, I think it's written by Garth Ennis, I believe.
Correct, sir, yes.
It really was lampooning, like, modern comic book. Like, modern comic books at the time.
Sure.
And it kind of...
Much in the same way that Alan Moore did back in the 70s and 80s.
In terms of
like, isn't this silly, you know... Who's to say that all of these, you know, just because they're heroes, that they're good people, you know?
Yeah, and that's kind of the whole premise of the show. And it, like I said, the comic book, it does certain things. But also, Garth Ennis is a little bit... He goes for shock value a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And they translate that to the show, too, sometimes.
Well, I mean, so. He did the Punisher Max series. He did
Preacher. He's a good writer. I'm not taking away from
him. He definitely doesn't shy away from the controversial or the shocking.
Yeah. So, it's definitely... This show is definitely for the mature theme. But you were saying about The Deep, though. Like, just to let you know, all of them are terrible.
Sure.
It's just to what degree are they terrible?
Right. Anyway, he's the analogous to, like, Aquaman or Namor or something like that. He's the underwater talks to fish guy. Just dirtbag. Like, long story short, in the very first episode, he tries to pull a Harvey Weinstein kind of thing. And then
massive abuse of power in that respect.
Yeah. And then from there, like, joins a religious cult and gets a big ego, publishes a tell-all memoir where he, like, rewrites his own history and, like, wins people over, like, oh, isn't he just the victim, and didn't we just, you know, wasn't he just maligned by the media and whatnot? And then turns out he fucks it up and ends up being an even bigger douchebag, and they're like, oh, well, never mind, there was your chance at not being canceled, now you're double canceled.
Yeah, he's
super stamp, no reversies.
You can't double stamp a triple stamp. You can't double stamp a triple stamp. And he was trying to double stamp a triple stamp, or triple stamp a double stamp. Sorry. Oh, man. No, it's a good show, though. Like, I was thoroughly entertained by seasons one and two. It's waiting for season three. I just got caught in other content and never came back.
It's worth a dive. I will say that there are periods where they sort of it follows the repetition of like action sequence, action sequence, action sequence, exposition dump, and then that goes on for 20 minutes. And usually the episodes are bookended by, you know, like there's the setup, there's a fight scene, we learn everything that we need to know to progress the story, and then there's another fight scene and on a cliffhanger. Every single episode is kind of follows the same formula, which is okay because within that, like, you do get to see some really cool, awkward, horrific shit.
Yeah. Very broken people.
You ever seen someone shrink down and then go inside somebody's wiener and then grow big?
Yeah, only in this show.
Yeah.
And we're certainly not just going to catalog all the terrible things that these people do. Cause,
No,
not for the squeamish, but the ending of season...
Squeamish.
The ending of season two, where Homelander is, let's just say, pleasuring himself, realizing, I can do whatever I want.
Oh, yeah.
That's such a weird scene.
Yeah.
But it's iconic in a weird way, though. Like, for that... It's very memorable that they ended on that, that they have this weird bargain with somebody who's all powerful, cannot be stopped ultimately, but you have dirt on this guy because he's so worried about his public perception that he'll let stuff slide as long as he looks like a good guy. Right, he's a terrible human being, but as long as I look good to the public,
exactly.
You can have your life.
That's sort of something that they focus on in season four, is they really get into the whole like why of, you know, Homelander feels this need to be loved and accepted by everybody. Yeah. You know, basically he's given the powers of a god. He's invincible, invulnerable. He's all powerful. And yet he could do anything. He could literally run rampant across the planet and no one would be able to stop him. And yet he doesn't do it because he wants to feel accepted and loved. And they really touch on that in season four a little bit. So
they are interesting characters when you break them down, and there's a lot of insecurities amongst them. I mean, but that's kind of their whole. That's the interesting part of the show, is that once the boys, whatever they're calling themselves, the boys, once they find out whatever the quote unquote weaknesses of these people, most time it's not kryptonite. You know, sometimes it is an actual item or an allergy. Let's just say, or whatever. And other times it's just, we're going to release this dirt on you of you doing terrible things if you don't play by the rules. It's like, oh, okay. So they try to break them down and on all these other creative ways. So definitely give it a watch if you're – it's kind of the most superhero, anti-superhero show. But definitely worth a watch. What would you rate it?
Oh, man. I'm going to give it – let's see. I'll give – well, no, I'll just give overall for the entire show so far. I was going to do season by season, but that gets too confusing. I'm going to give The Boys, overall, I'm going to give it, 3 shots of Compound V.
I was going to give it 8,000 vials of Compound V.
Oh, that's a lot of vials.
Well, yeah, you don't know the scale. It could be of a million.
Oh, I guess that's true.
That's what I'm saying. It's a different scale, but...
fair point.
Exact same review, though, somehow.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Let's see. After that, I saw the classic 1981 film starring Bill Murray and Harold Ramis and John Candy, Stripes.
Oh, nice. I know a lot of people that absolutely love that movie.
It's pretty funny. It's, I mean, classic 80s comedy, you know, it's a buddy comedy, but in a weird way. I mean, kind of in the same way that Ghostbusters was or Coming to America or something like that, you know, like it's two friends thrust into an unfortunate or unfamiliar situation. But it's a common situation, you know, like there's in Coming to America, being an immigrant, literally coming to America is something that thousands of people experience every day. It just happens to be the Eddie Murphy twist on it, you know, whereas joining the army, this is the Bill Murray, you know, Harold Ramis, Ivan Reitman directed jaunt on that.
I see. It is directed by Ivan Reitman, right?
Right, yes.
We were just talking a little bit ago. We were like, I think in that era of movies, you have a good chance, if you're not sure who directed some funny movie, of it being like, was it Mel Brooks? Nah, you pretty much know the Mel Brooks feel.
Sure.
Like, is it John Landis, Ivan Reitman, or...
Harold Ramis.
You have a pretty good chance.
Yeah. It's kind of like with makeup. It's either Stan Winston, Tom Savini, God, who was the other guy?
The guy that did the Alien?
H.R. No, not H.R. God damn it. Rick Baker was who we were looking for. On a side note.
Yeah, man. Behind the scenes one day. Anyway.
If you guys only understood how long of a deviation in conversation we just had. Oh, my God. None of it's ever going to make the air. But, oh, if we had just a compilation of shit that doesn't make the, like that just stays on the cutting room floor.
The show would be unfollowable. It would be. People would, I mean, it probably already is. But, yeah, the show would be vastly, like you guys are already tough enough with your inside jokes and you speak each other's language a little too well.
We literally had, like, six side conversations.
So, anyway, doggy style.
Yeah. Anyways, I saw Stripes. Weird tangent.
Directed by Ivan Reitman.
That's right. Classic 80s style movie. Just jokes a minute, a lot of visual gags, puns. It's very, you know, like, it's very talking head, but it's very much, you know, one person says the setup, the other one says the punchline, or something happens and then both people react to it in very different ways or something like that. Like, does that make sense? It's very 80s style. It's very setup, punchline, long exposition where we tell the story and then setup, punchline.
No, I get it. Punchline. I get it. No, I get it. It's the more classical sense. I got you.
Like Groundhog Day or even like Year One a little bit. Ladybugs, Groundhog Day.
he loves that bit. Anyways, no. I've seen Stripes. I know I watched it probably when I was in high school was the last time I did. Mm-hmm. But again, that's getting to be more than 20 years ago. So, yeah, I don't really remember this movie very much at all. And it wasn't in steady rotation when I was a kid. Like, I know it got, we watched a lot of Bill Murray movies, and mm-hmm. I mean, we had a pretty healthy dose of when we went to the video store when Dad would rent something for us. It was something that,
sure,
you know, it's like, oh, you guys have never seen, like, The Jerk, for example, was sure. One of them, or a couple other things. But so I know I've seen it. I'm sure the importance of that movie has been shown before, as a lot of things live on. I'm sure, but nowadays with social media, I've seen clips from it. In fact, I know I did recently.
Sure.
But yeah, I got really no opinion on this movie, except I know a lot of people really think this is Bill Murray at the peak of his powers.
I mean, you got to understand, this was coming off of Caddyshack. This was, I mean, this film essentially is what brought the cast of Ghostbusters together in a weird way. I mean, you know, Ivan Reitman directed. He had already worked with Bill Murray in, I think, Caddyshack. There might have been one more, but anyway, they would go on to have a long, illustrious career, I mean, together. But yeah, just so funny, so quotable. It's got Sean Young as one of the love interests. You might know her as Lieutenant Einhold from Ace Ventura.
Oh, Einhorn?
Einhorn, I'm sorry.
Finkel and Einhorn. Yeah. Einhorn right. And Finkel.
Yeah,
that movie did not. I mean, the performance is still really funny, but thematically, Ace Ventura did not age very well.
Agreed, but it did, for better or worse, it did cement Jim Carrey as a very good comedic character actor. You know,
like, oh yeah, no, I'm not. Again, the performance still holds up. I'm not saying. I'm saying the themes about, like, well, everyone was disgusted the fact that they kissed a man, and everyone's like, scraping their tongues off. Oh, it's the grossest thing I could ever do. Like, but yeah, that aspect of the film alone doesn't really stand out. But
sure.
Anyways, Jim Carrey's performance still does, though.
I mean, I saw him in I just recently watched the Sonic movie, and he plays Dr. Robotnik.
Yeah, he's unhinged in that.
It's very, very Ace Ventura-esque. So, at the very least, he's made a career out of being the manic rubber-faced man, which, I mean, good for you. Like, who else are you going to get, you know, like
a Jim Carrey type, or
do you want to get Jim Carrey? Exactly. Right. Like, he's established his own status in terms of, like, well, we could kind of get Jim Carrey guy, or let's just get Jim Carrey and have him do it, you know? Just, we need somebody to play a cartoon character.
Did you just watch Sonic for the first time recently? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, we could dive in on that. I saw that movie on a matinee by myself.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when I had a Regal movie pass.
Okay.
I was living in Maryland, and I would tell people all the time, like, every day we checked in, or over the weekends or whatever on Monday – You go to a little group therapy session. Oh, what'd you do this weekend? Went to a movie. What'd you do this weekend? I went to a movie.
Sure.
And people, oh, you never take me to the movies. I'm like, I go every weekend. Like, at what point? I tell y'all, I take an Uber, I go to the movie theater, I go watch the movie, I come back, or I take the bus out there, whatever. Only one person, shout out to you, my cinnamon toast crunch queen, you know who you are.
Yeah, shout out to you, my cinnamon toast crunch queen.
It's my homie Jackie. I call her, I call her cinnamon toast crunch. But no, she was the only person that ever took me up on going to the movies. And so I was going a lot, and Sonic was one of those. I saw Detective Pikachu the same way.
Oh my God.
I'll just go see Detective Pikachu by myself on a matinee.
Same thing. You weren't drinking at this time?
No.
Surprise. Wow.
Yeah, went to go see Sonic the same way. And I said the same thing. Was like, Jim Carrey is back in his form.
Oh, yeah.
But anyways, long tangent, back to Stripes. What did you think about it? Some people say this is the pinnacle of Bill Murray powers. We can talk all three Sonic movies if you watch three, by the way.
Pinnacle of Bill Murray powers. I mean, in a weird way, Bill Murray has had three stages of his career. The first one was where he was, you know, coming off of the Chicago Players or whatever, you know, his
Groundlings?
The Groundlings, right. His improv stuff, you know, going into Caddyshack and Stripes and Ghostbusters and whatever, you know, like his very comedic yes and performance where you could just let Bill Murray be Bill Murray on screen and you were guaranteed comedic gold because
right.
he would take these weird characters to these elevated places where you're just like, well, that's fucking odd and funny.
Yeah.
You know,
just naturally a funny guy.
Sure. Yeah. The Groundhog Day of it all, the whatever.
We were talking about that same type of person who's just funny, even if they're not trying to be. We were right. talking about like Mr. Bean is one of them.
Sure.
Talking about like John Cleese. Tracy Morgan is another person. I don't know if he knows he's being funny, as they say in Big Mouth, but you're fucking funny.
Right. And then, you know, you have the second phase with Bill Murray's career where he does the more serious acting. You know,
Lost in Translations.
The Rushmore, the even sort of the Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou. Like, as funny as a movie as that is, he puts in a very serious performance.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, and then now we're sort of getting the resurgence where it's Bill Murray going back into his comedic roots. You know, the Zombielands, the Ghostbusters reboots, where it's Bill Murray just being funny Bill Murray again, you know. It's funny to see the nascent beginnings of this comedy dynamic that's going to extend for arguably the next 20 years, 30 years, you know, with Ivan Reitman and Harold Ramis and John Candy and, you know, all those players, you know, yeah. Rick Moranis, all those cats.
Shout out to Rick Moranis.
Right. So it's, I laughed so much at this movie because I hadn't seen it in a while and there was so much that I had forgotten and how quotable the movie was. I mean, like, things that were just lost in the back of my memory, and then as soon as they said it, I was like, oh yeah,
those are the best. Right. Those are the best. So anything else on Stripes, or you want to go ahead and review it, or what else you got?
I will go ahead and rate Stripes 1. Chaka-laka-laka, boom!
One of the highest reviews given on what you've been watching, for those that have been keeping track at home. Anything else, man?
Let's see. After that, oh, here we go. We're about to go on a wild tangent here.
Oh, my goodness.
So I rewatched.
Can I guess?
Go ahead. Sure.
Have we talked about it on the podcast before?
Many times.
Is it the Addams Family?
It is not the Addams Family.
Okay, go ahead.
It is. I recently, just out of the blue, rewatched the Chuck Heston 1968, 69 movie, Planet of the Apes.
Oh, nice. We were just talking about that in our movie trivia Moxie game.
Goddamn right.
What a twist.
Almost as if it was inspirational.
Oh, nice. No, that's also, to circle back, we were talking about the tricks to the movie trivia Moxie, is you can frame questions any way you want. You can, like, I think that question I asked on that was, So, Planet of the Apes had a hell of a twist, right?
Right.
You just ask anything related to anything at that point. So, anyways.
But yeah, recently sat down and rewatched that. The whole, behind the curtains, the goal is to rewatch all of the Planet of the Apes movies up to the brand new Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which I have not seen,
okay.
But it's the only one I have not seen yet. So I'm trying to review them and see if I can garner some sort of like fresh opinion on this.
Yeah, that is the original movie franchise. And there's what, six original ones? It's
The original six are Planet of the Apes,
okay.
Beneath the Planet of the Apes, where they find the bomb that they all worship. Escape from the Planet of the Apes, where Zira and Cornelius go back in time to quote-unquote modern-day America. And then Conquest for the Planet of the Apes, where the apes have an uprising where they basically turn off the shackles of their oppressors and Caesar shouts no. And then the last one is Battle for the Planet of the Apes, where Caesar officially turns on the humans and basically banishes them to the wastelands or whatever, therefore setting up the events of the original movie.
Okay.
Complicated, I know.
Yeah, I forget the timeline entirely.
Still one of my favorite series, bro. I love it.
And it's the original franchise, man.
I love it. There's so many bad costumes.
They get worse.
There's so much. The first movie is amazing, and like the costumes are great. The sets are fantastic. It's all like hand-constructed, you know, like physical sets.
Right,
like,
practical effects. Yeah.
And then eventually they're just like, nah, we're just going to film in the Sedona Desert for like 4 days and hope for the best.
Yeah. What's the joke in Tropic Thunder? He's like, you think we out here shooting Planet of the Apes on YouTube or some shit? One of the best jokes.
There's so many. If you pay attention, the masks get considerably worse to the point where like at one point somebody comes up and says a line and it's just a Hollywood rubber mask and all you just see is like the bottom jaw just flapping like
yeah, man.
So good.
Yeah. So you watched all six of them already?
No. I rewatched the original.
Okay.
And then I jumped to the remake with James Franco and the motion capture performance of Andy Serkis.
I don't know how that guy has not won an Oscar.
Rise of the Planet of the Apes.
How has that guy not won an Oscar?
Not for Lord of the Rings?
No, wasn't even nominated, man.
Really?
Yeah, that's like one of the biggest snubs ever.
Really?
We talked about it before, and we won't spend too much time, but like with comedy roles, and like that's such a groundbreaking role.
For sure.
It should have been.
I mean, the dude literally rewrote the book on motion capture. As far as what was possible in terms of CGI effects and characters becoming other bigger characters. I mean, like, you don't get to Thanos without Gollum. You don't get to
damn near anybody.
I mean, really anything that's going on nowadays, you know, like Tom Holland filming the new Spider-Man movies, they could have just put him in a spandex suit and been like, just turn flips, monkey boy. But they put him in like a mocap suit and had to digitally affect the suit onto him to make it look right. You know, like it's.
Yeah. Even if you take all that away, even if I think it's more impressive that he does a motion capture and he's doing it by himself largely.
Sure.
With the director and a few other people in the room. But even if you just were to put, you know, Andy Serkis in a Gollum mask, he embodied that character so well.
Sure, yeah.
It's so iconic. But anyways. Yeah.
Just from his body movements and the way, like, he changed his physicality to become that character.
Yeah, it's a hell of a performance. But we say all that, he was the actor that played
Caesar
in the remakes, so, right, or the updated version, we should say. Right. So, yeah.
Which is amazing. I mean, in terms of telling the origins of a beloved series, I mean, I know that they had attempted the Mark Wahlberg reboot that didn't really pan out, and quite frankly was so ridiculous that it got so complicated and so campy that I couldn't take it seriously, which I really wanted to, because for all intents and purposes they use practical effects. Like, they didn't do CGI monkeys. They put actors in
makeup.
They're apes,
first off. They're apes.
Whatever.
I know what you mean, though. I'm just picking on you.
Listen, Jane Goodall, back the fuck up.
Have to have standards, sir. No,
David Attenborough over here.
Yeah, for real. Couldn't tell you the difference. Yeah. I know there is one. I couldn't tell you.
But yeah, I mean, they had people in practical prosthetic makeup, you know, so like in the very spirit of the original movie, it still just didn't work. It was ridiculous and totally over the top and campy to the point of I lost interest. Like, all right, what new other sci-fi trope are they going to shoehorn in now? You know,
talking about the Tim Burton remake.
Yeah, with Mark Wahlberg. Yeah.
That one was missable. That was pretty bad.
Yeah. But yeah,
made a lot of money though. One of the biggest box office opening weekends for a very long time.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, set a lot of records.
Okay.
Again, it's tucked away in there somewhere.
But anyway, I liked the reboot or prequel reboot reimagining, whatever you want to call it, with James Franco.
I actually do too. It's directed by Rupert Wyatt, and then Matt Reeves took over the second one, who directed the Batman.
Correct.
But no, I like the one that how we got on Andy Serkis in the first place, how he plays Caesar in these. But I like the John Lithgow was really good in it. Mm-hmm. I like the concept of how they're working on a cure for Alzheimer's, which is a terrible disease for anyone that has it.
And John Lithgow's performance as he basically plays
James Franco's dad.
James
who's
Franco's
suffering.
Dad, right. Which is James Franco's whole impetus for what's his name, Will.
I think so.
I think it's Will. Anyway, it's his whole impetus for being a bioengineer or
whatever the title is,
neuron chemist or whatever it's called, you know, sciencey guy.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, and John Lithgow turns in a gut wrenching, just heart tearing performances. Like you see, when he loses his grip on reality after he's been exposed to this experimental drug and he's regaining his abilities and he's becoming proficient as a piano player again, and he's playing Mozart and enjoying life, and then to see it all of a sudden, it's almost like awakenings or something like that, where like the drug works and then all of a sudden his body builds up an immunity or resistance to it, and to see it slip away and he knows it's slipping away, he's like just the horror and the not apathy, what's the word I'm looking for? The ennui of just like, well, there's nothing I can do to stop it. Like,
yeah. It's got to be tough, man. I've seen some people pass away from some physical ailments, but anybody that's, you know, you have to ask yourself what's worse, watching your body deteriorate away, but you're clear mentally and so you're aware of it, or watching your body still function and your brain go. It's
So thanks for that new nightmare that I'm going to think about later tonight.
Well, hey, I mean, I missed the point of the movie. But no, it's, I mean, I just like they set it up well enough where it's actually believable. That movie, I don't know if you want to fast forward, if you want to talk more about it, but you're talking about the whole franchise, so I figured.
I followed it up by watching the second one, which was.
Hang on. That's before you do that. The one thing I do like about the James Franco first one is they set up Caesar very well, how he becomes an experimental ape for this drug, which then gives him super monkey intelligence powers.
Basically,
and he unites other apes that have been captive, held by the kid from Harry Potter.
Draco Malfoy.
And the one thing they gloss over, though, and it's at the very end of the movie, which I thought was really bold, while the credits are rolling, either while the credits are ending in that movie or the credits are beginning in the next movie,
you're right. It's the credits are ending, or I'm sorry, the credits are beginning. It's the roll on to the credits.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like the movie finishes, they have one last little tag on scene, and then the credits roll.
Yeah. And the whole thing is like this virus then comes and starts wiping out humanity.
Mm-hmm. And you see, it's almost like 28 days later, like you see how it's spreading from country to city, and it becomes this global pandemic just through like computer CGI. Like you see a plane land from New York to London, then all of a sudden it branches off and it goes into like various areas of Spain and France and Germany, and then it spreads from there to Russia and Polistan or whatever.
How outbreaks work. Yes.
Yeah.
But no, I just thought that was a really bold move to do mid credits. Like, so the movie and the next movie, we just gloss over that. Mm-hmm. I just think that was a really brave move to be like, the movies aren't about that. It's about the rise of the Planet of the Apes, right, you know what I mean, right. How we get there.
It's a true origin story.
And so I dug that, which there's a whole series that people could touch on in that, oh, what was the virus and what happened there?
Right.
They just don't even touch it. They're like, right, nope. Right.
They don't pick up until the second movie where, like,
it's already taken.
The virus is already, it's like 10 years later. The virus has already happened. Humanity's already fallen. Like 90% of humanity has been wiped out by the simian virus. Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought that was a bold move. So I had to take a minute before you moved on to that one.
No, you're right. It was a bold move, and it told the story perfectly without – it was show me, not tell me, which is beautiful in a movie.
Yeah, like our story is not about that. I'm like, oh, okay, which rich tapestry there for other people to tap into one day if they want to.
Yeah.
So – but yeah, then it goes into Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Which is about a dam, pretty much.
is this a goddamn?
Yeah. Well done. Beavis and Butthead to America, all-time classic.
Yeah, so it basically picks up 10 years later, and like I said, 90% of humanity has been wiped out. There's this contingent of humans that are exploring, and they come across Caesar's camp. He's already established this, like, tribal kingdom of super smart apes, and like it opens with they're hunting deer in the forest and running through the trees and throwing spears. It's this great opening action sequence to really show how their civilization works. You know, they're running through the trees and they're using sign language to communicate silently with each other, you know.
Right. Apes together strong.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Which, going back just a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. We're talking the whole franchise.
Yeah, it's weird that the first movie essentially is about, like, in a weird way, I found it about unionization in terms of it's the workers, the apes, all coming together to throw off the shackles of their oppressors and the proletariat that are using them for their abilities or using them for their skills. And rising and conquering them. It really is. It's like the French Revolution or something.
I don't know if they were being used for their skills at that point. I might disagree with you on that. I think it is very much so about unionization and being like, look, because he even says, look, if we do this one at a time, we're going to, they'll snuff us out.
Right.
You know,
right.
But if we are smart and we work together, you know, the whole apes together strong.
I mean, I would argue that.
So I think at that point, it's more like they're still being experimented and treated cruelly. They don't really know humans what the implications of this is on apes fully.
No.
And so they're not like, hey, you write me an essay, ape. You know,
No. I don't mean for their skills in terms of like they can turn a wrench, or whatever, but they are essentially being used for like their skill is being experimented on. Their skill like, let's give this ape this experimental drug and then we'll test and measure the results. So they are being exploited in that way.
No. Exploitation was. I guess I just took
abilities literally.
Yeah. I was nitpicking, which I need to not do.
No,
picking
no,
on people's
okay.
words. No, but I do agree though, and it is very much so. Like I said, just escaping of the oppressors and things of that, and you know, unifying. So I can agree with those terms certainly.
Yeah, the one note that I wrote down while I watched this movie, and it's so funny, I just put joining together to force change against the corporate agenda that exploits the less fortunate?
It's a good question. Poses a tough answer.
I might have been a little intoxicated when I watched that movie.
I mean, you're spot on. You're spot on. So anyway, so that's the first one. And then the second one is, like you said, there was a small faction of humans runs into Caesar's camp.
Yeah.
And they want to obtain, there's a dam. The whole movie's about a dam, I feel like. They spend a lot of time there. And right. They can generate power for their civilization. But it's kind of under the apes, for lack of a better term, like under their control, under their territory.
It's in their territory, right.
So like,
right,
hey,
right.
We can work together. And if you let us do this, we'll leave you alone. And we'll, yeah. And there's the conflict is that some apes are like, if you give them this power, you're giving them literal power back, and then they can use that to turn on us.
In fact, one of the main proponents is the antagonist, basically, is this other ape called Koba, who is essentially Caesar's second in command, and he makes the point like, you love humans more than you love apes. You care so much about them that you're willing to sacrifice our health just because you have some reminiscent tie to
James Franco.
to the life that was. The like And his whole point is that's not our life anymore. We are two warring tribes, and if you let them, he doesn't eloquate it as much as I do, but basically, if you let these people into our lives, they're going to turn on you. They're going to, because of their inherent mistrust of you, we're never going to be equal. They're always going to suspect you. They're always going to be looking for an opportunity to take what is ours.
Yeah, pretty much.
And for better or worse, he's not wrong. I mean, basically, the leader of the human faction is played by Gary Oldman, and he gives this very, like, it's almost like the presidential speech in Independence Day, but it's the inverse of that. Like, instead of unifying them in terms of, like, let's put aside our differences and today's the day we declare Independence Day, it's very much like, and this is our planet, and we're going to take it back, and these monkeys be damned. And if they think that they own us and, you know, whatever, they can tell us where we can tread, they're mistaken, and I'll shoot any monkey that tries to take my gun from my cold, dead hands.
No step on snake.
Right. Yeah. Only good monkey's a dead monkey, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's very much, he's rallying his people, but it's very much,
yeah, it's a battle mobilizing cry. It's a battle cry for different reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I always forget that actor's name. He was in Pet Sematary. What's the main guy who kind of is more of the diplomat between Caesar? The actor, I forget his name.
Oh, Lord. It's Matt Clark is the guy's name.
Jason Clark.
Jason Clark, sorry.
Yeah.
Matt Clark's the guy I went to high school with. Not really. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. We just roll over that one.
Right.
But yeah, no, he's more of the diplomat between them. And then obviously Caesar and him see eye to eye and they have a pretty good understanding. But behind each faction of, you know, they have a mutual respect for each other and like, hey, good.
But then, right, there's behind the scenes powers that are plotting like, well, I don't trust the apes, so I need to prepare for war. And meanwhile, Koba's, I don't trust the humans, I need to prepare for war. And then
also I can seize power by having people turn on Caesar. So
there is that element as well.
Having apes turn on Caesar.
Yeah. Right, right. He does have a whole coup d'etat scene that plays out pretty well. But I mean, ultimately, it's about diplomacy and how communication breaks down. It invariably leads to conflict, whether you're human, ape, and not only within warring factions, but within the tribes themselves, about how ulterior motives and miscommunications and denial of reality invariably brings down entire kingdoms.
Yeah. No, that's true. And then you couple that with some little girl that Caesar takes. Oh, that's the third one. I'm sorry. That's the
Sorry.
No, it's a different movie. But no, it there also is a little bit of the apes also becoming the same thing they hate in terms of their personality.
Sure,
it's,
right.
They then become the oppressors, and they ultimately they could each learn a little bit from each other, but they're like most movies, everyone's a little bit short-sighted.
Sure,
And Caesar's trying to go out on a limb and extend the olive branch.
What you did there?
Yeah,
go out on a limb,
extend the olive branch.
He's an ape.
Yep. And Jason Clark's there trying to accept it and let people understand, like, hey, they could have just killed us all, so
right,
we need to
right,
take what right. they're giving us and have some reverence for the situation.
And they have the recurrent theme of, you know, the ape's mantra is ape does not kill ape, and then invariably, of course, because of infighting and different ideologies, guess what? One rule gets broken, you know? And so it's apes sort of realizing that, oh, we are more human, or humans are more ape, or however you want to view it. We're indiscriminate. We're indecipherable from one another. We have the exact same society based on mistrust and lust of power and a desire for resources and invariably just, I need to protect my own.
Yep, a lot of parallels to nowadays, man. People not coming off it. So
Yeah.
I get it. No, I genuinely like the Planet of the Apes franchise. I'm really more in tune with the because I know I've watched the first one, the 1960 version, many, many years ago. I think it was actually when we were in St. Pete for some reason. I remember watching those. I like the new. I saw all three of the new ones. I just didn't see the fourth one that came out.
Yeah, I have not. I have not yet either. And that's
apparently
the
it's pretty
goal.
Good though.
Yeah, I hear. Good. Yeah. I want to see how it plays out. Apparently, this is the last one that they're going to do before they either like drop the series entirely or reboot it in a couple of years, depending on what the studios decide to do.
We just need to write a movie of what was going on with the humans while the virus hit, while the simian flu hit.
I, I agree.
We just got to write that movie, Michael.
That's a good one. Who would you cast in that?
Andy Serkis. Of course. Playing everybody.
Well, no. I flip it and have him play like one of the main humans.
Yeah, that'd be pretty funny. No, I don't know. I would have to figure out the direction of the movie first and what it was actually about. I mean, because it could easily just turn into 28 Days Later, you know, where it's people. Or, you know, what's it called? Last of Us, where it's just humans are the enemy. So
sure.
I'd have to figure out the direction before I cast it. So
I would cast Jim Carrey as the man in the monkey suit.
I'm going to roll with the What You Been Watching Wall of Famers. I'm casting Sammy Rockwell.
Oh, as Dancing Monkey?
I'm going to cast John Leguizamo.
As other Dancing Monkey?
I didn't say anything about monkeys yet. I'm going to cast Rosario Dawson. Careful there. I don't know. Some of the Watching Wall of Famers. You know, we'll see what happens.
So. Jeremy Renner's Archer Ape.
Yeah, there we go. Renner's got to be there. I feel like... I always forget our female representation, and I know Regina King's on there.
Sure.
There's been more, though. I always forget our female representation. Oh.
I would cast Margo Martindale.
Margo Martindale.
Oh, yeah.
She's on there. Anyways, this is turning into just a me listing some What You've Been Watching Wall of Famers, but that's where I start with Michael, and then we pivot out from there. So, yeah, other than that, though, man, what do you think? Let me know when you watch War, because I thought War was pretty good.
I definitely am going to give a review. I've seen the third one. I think it's called War for the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, that's War for the Planet of the Apes.
And then the fourth one I haven't seen yet, which is Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes.
Let me know when you do. I'll watch it. We can sit down and break it down.
For sure.
I'll watch three to catch up.
Sure.
Because I've seen three. I saw all three of those movies when they came out in theater. So I liked them. I thought they hit pretty well. Yeah. So you want to review them or more Planet of the Apes talk? Or?
I'm going to give it, let's see. I'll give the franchise... You maniacs. You blew it up. You maniacs. Damn you. Damn you all to hell.
There is no way I'm topping that review. So we're going to let that simmer for a minute. Well played. He went into his inner thespian on that one, y'all. Just for you, the people. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back with more What You've Been Watching from our sponsor, Backup Cameras. Please still look side to side. Be right back. We are back from our sponsor, Backup Cameras. Backup cameras in your car. They simply only look directly behind you. If you are pulling out of a parking space, please continue to look left and right.
Also, I don't trust technology, so I'm still going to old school that shit and like just turn my head. Anyways, doggy style. Let me ask you, brother.
Yes, sir.
What you been watching?
Oh, man. Honestly, you have carried this episode, and I am so grateful for that, because I'm glad you asked, truly, but I have not been watching a lot. Outside of the usual, sports has started back up, so I will not bore y'all with the details of my sporting endeavors. I'll just say that Florida State, get your shit together, and the Eagles, well done in Brazil. Well done in Brazil.
Wait, what now?
They played their opening game in Sao Paulo, Brazil. The Eagles did.
For real, for real?
Yeah, they call it football there, but it's soccer here. They played it on a soccer pitch. Apparently the pitch is a field as well. But yeah, they played it on a soccer pitch, and it was like the ice skating rink. Like nobody could get traction. It was pretty tough to watch. But
really?
Eagles still won. So.
Who did they play against?
The Packers.
Okay.
Which is funny. The other thing, just real quick, it's originally they said, and I think there was a lot of misinformation, but they played it at Corinthian Stadium, which mm-hmm. that's the team that plays there is the Corinthians. And their colors are black and white. Well, their rivals have the color green. And so there's a ban at the stadium that you cannot wear green in the stadium. And yet they invited...
Because Brazilian soccer.
Yeah, but yeah, and they're trying to cut down on hooliganism and just keep people safe. So you're not allowed to wear green in the stadium. It's been a city ordinance.
Oi, What's it said?
What's digit in Green? Brazil? Yeah, in Portuguese.
I was going to say, how do we do that in Brazil?
Yeah.
Oi, what's this then?
Yeah, I won't even try. But no, it's just funny.
Just roll your R's a lot.
Sounds like the Cheshire Cat at some point, or the caterpillar. Who are you?
That's right.
Anyways, no, but I just find it funny that they ban green in the stadium, and then they invite the Green Bay Packers, whose color is green.
And also
the Philadelphia Eagles, whose colors are like. Anyways, they went off without a hitch, though. Nobody got injured, at least none of the players. They had a giant list of do and do nots that the players were like, man, this is a bunch of misinformation. Everyone here's been so cool, but, I mean, robbery, I mean, it's everywhere, you know. I think they gave them a big list. Like, don't go over there and be an idiot. Like, you're...
Pretty much. When I was on the boat, they used to give us a whole, you know, like, departure rules. You know,
right.
Like, hey, we're going to let you off the boat, but, like, here's some things you might need to know. Like, there's certain areas of town that are definitely run by, you know, cartels and prostitutes. And if you go there, you will get robbed. And
yeah.
We might not be able to help you kind of thing. Or, like, if you go into this section of town, it's only to buy drugs or prostitutes. So don't go into that section of town, because if you get busted, we're going to know.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so kind of those things. But apparently it was, you know, everybody seemed to, the players at least had a good time, so. And the Eagles won, so the only thing I will say, I got a show pitch for you. And if you are a TV exec, thank you, first off, for listening. We know our reach is wide and vast here. And you've been,
that's right.
So, but I ask that you just include us on this.
Coming this Sunday's on TBS.
Right. Just include us on this. You don't necessarily, you know, I just don't want people stealing our stuff. But
copyright, patent pending.
Patent pending. So when we say that, I will say my TV show pitch, though, is now that sports are back, I listen to probably way more talk radio and talk like sports talk than I probably need
to. Like sports analysis stuff.
Yeah, and I want to get a TV show, at least at the end of a season, like the football season or whatever, where I just get current players to just rip on all the analysts the same way that the analysts rip on the players. And what do I mean by that? These analysts and these sports takes guys, I understand that it's a gig, so I'm not going to completely eviscerate them here.
Sure.
But you just sit in a room and you opine all day, and sure. You're like, oh, I think this, I think that, I think this, I think that. Oh, what's your... And so...
Welcome to the Watchmen Watching Podcast.
Yeah, I know. I know, right? But they opine all day.
I just want to be clear.
Yeah, like... no, I'm not... Look, we're in the same boat. That's why I have no problem doing it. If you wanted to rip our takes apart, I'd be like, yeah, that's fair enough. 42 lightsabers. What kind of review is that even? Yeah. No, but the point is that they sit there and they judge these men in the arena all day. Sure. And if you sit in a room and the gig is to opine, you know, to have an opinion on every single sport, you know, damn near every single relevant sports.
Every play.
Yeah, every decision, everything. Right. Every, oh, this person's going this way. This person's going to this team. Right. And this.
They should have cut left, but they cut
right.
Yeah.
I just want current players to have a show, a platform at the end of the season to sit there and play back all their takes that they got wrong. Because so often these guys...
Oh, that's genius.
...sit there and they... Again, you have an opinion on everything. You're bound to be right occasionally. But so many of these guys will go in afterwards and bang their chest. See, I told you. Timestamp, but I told you.
Right.
And then they gloss over when they're wrong or when they flip-flop.
Yeah, if you look at their actual, like, quote-unquote batting average, it's like, well, you got that one right, but then you went up and struck out six times in a row. So,
yeah,
like,
or they'll waffle the – I mean, which I get. Their whole defense is, well, I got new information, so I changed my opinion. Okay, cool, but you also banged your chest about it for a week going, how this will never be
– there's no way that the Green Bay Packers will ever dominate over the Arizona Cardinals, da-da-da. Actually, I'm going to take that back I found out they're playing in Arizona this week, so that was previous information that I didn't know.
And so I just want to...
brought on this awesome sports manager named Jerry Maguire who changed the team.
Right. No, but I just want to...
You had me at hello.
I just want a show that just gives current athletes a platform to rip them in return. Be like, hey, you remember when you said this? And they play back the tape, which they do for you. And like, he should have hooked right, but he hooked left. And then the quarterback had a miscommunication. So they'll sit there and play the game tape back. I just want them to play their takes back to him and just eviscerate them. Just be like, yeah, you were dead ass wrong, and you were talking a lot of shit about me and my team. And just you just need two sports guys that aren't afraid to really go after it. Though.
So like Marshawn Lynch or something like that. Like I'm talking literally going to like the whiteboard, like John Madden style. Like boom, see right here where he writes down how Denver's gonna win, and then that was totally wrong.
Yeah,
look at that.
When he picked this team to win the division, and they came in dead last place. Now I'm gonna play you back the tape on September 10th. Watch him waffle right here. Watch him sweat profusely when confronted about it and outright lie to you, the people claiming that he never said that on this date in March. Oh, guess what?
They're slowing down the tape and like zooming in, being like, look right here. They're like circling his eyebrow, being like, look at the sweat coming off his brow right here. You can tell he's not committed to this statement.
Look at him try to interrupt his coworkers 7 times because it's a debate show, and he got watch him getting cooked during this segment, being how wrong he is by the people that are sitting at the desk, and watch him double down
he
2 days
could
later.
Go all the fuck, he fucked it up.
Yeah. I just think that would be fun. Just being like, because they get shit all day about, like I said, from these guys just like, oh, and this team, he's not good, and this person can't play. And it's like, all right, let's flip this camera back on you from some people that are actually in the arena and not just sitting around fucking giving their opinions all day.
Here's the thing.
I think there's a market for it.
May I give you my opinion from if I was a producer, you know, like,
yes, sir.
Just we're playing roles here. If I was the producer, let me give you my standpoint on that. I think you could absolutely do a 22-minute segment on that.
Okay.
You're not going to be able to stretch that into a whole SportsCenter length feature.
No, I never
You know
would.
What I mean? Like, that also being said, I think that you could absolutely find a bunch of players that are willing to sign up for that. Now, are they going to be funny? Are they going to be cognizant? Are they going to be, you know, have good points? Or is it just going to be two sports players fucking around for 22 minutes?
Like, it would just
would have to really refine your choice of candidates to find, like, people who are affable and funny and can continue a conversation as opposed to just being like, yeah, fuck him. He got it wrong. I'm just here so I don't get sued. You know?
Yeah, well, no, that's like anything. You like if you do color commentary for football or whatever, like you got to have a take. Like,
sure,
Troy Aikman will kind of bust some ass. Like, but if everyone, the refs did a good job. Everyone's doing a good job all the time. It's just boring. Mm-hmm. So you got to have somebody that's willing to get after it. But yeah, no, it's just really the same thing of just, and this is why I can't talk sports with a lot of people is. Everyone just plays the results. I'm guilty of it, too. We Monday morning quarterbacking, knowing the results of what happened. Oh, they should have. And, like, you don't know shit.
Thank you, Captain Hindsight.
Yeah, we all just sit around and play the results
all
day. Well,
if it was me, I would have definitely thrown that one instead of taking that tackle. Like, well, yeah.
Yeah.
You had the overhead camera looking at the dude sneaking in from the backfield that sacked him. The quarterback's looking completely left, and he got hit from the right. So, of course, that's what you would have done.
Yeah.
Because you have the overhead camera, you dumbass.
Yeah, or no, you're playing the results. Right. And I just think it'd be fun for some of these current athletes to play the results of some of these dumbass takes that I listen to all day. But right. I'm like, you can't – are you playing a character right now for ratings? Because there's no way you're saying this with a straight face and then in turn trying to be respected amongst your peers with this dumbass take.
Right.
Like, okay. And I just want people to point that out and go, remember when he said that one day and then you doubled down all week and then every month until the season was over? Yeah, you're a dumbass.
Right.
Because that's what you do to us all day.
Yeah, for sure.
You play the results. Okay, so let's play the – I don't know. I think it'd be fun.
You're right. But there is something to be said for like, well, if you look at the stats on the board here, he made 178 calls and percentage-wise he hit 28%.
Ooh.
Like, I'm just saying, those are rookie numbers. You've been in business 15 years. You know?
I would have benched his ass, yeah.
That's right.
It could only work, like you said.
Somebody get me Brian Gumbel.
All right. Shit, I'll take Barney Gumbel.
I'll take Barney Rubble.
Yeah, right. No, but it would only work if you actually had players that were willing to, like,
yeah,
be like, man, or either, like, just quit the league or are on their way
have
out.
Nothing to lose.
Yeah, or
yeah,
just be like, I'm going to eviscerate.
Bring in Tom Brady to be like, well.
Yeah. Why don't you shut the fuck up for life if I was wrong 42% of the time?
One of us has a Super Bowl ring for each finger plus one for his cock and bang Gisele Bündchen and also, is the greatest of all time and going unequivocally into the Hall of Fame first round draft pick. So if I was you, I'd shut the fuck up.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my pitch for the show. We'll call it playing the results. Yeah, it'd be a fun show. So don't take my stuff.
I would love to see that. Like just them doing a John Madden of just like, boom, see how he puts the marker right here and he's totally off?
Or just do it at the end of the season. where you can just take all these bad takes that got underneath someone that was like, they call it bulletin board material when they hear these. And I don't mean like the play-by-play guys. Like, they're just doing their job. They're just calling the game as it goes.
No, we're talking
about the people that sit around on the couch. Yeah, the ESPN, you know, the not to call them out, but like Stephen A. Smith, Nick Wright, who I have a love and hate relationship with both of them.
Not to call them out, but here's the
names. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, but I just mean, you know, those types. Not like the play-by-play guys. But anyways, I think that'd be
not specifically them. Just
those types.
Right.
Yeah, Nick Wright does get on my nerves.
For legal distinction reasons.
Some people, and some people do this, and I respect it to a certain extent because we all do, where, like, for example, I'll say somebody that I'm not a big fan of, Ben Shapiro. I can say he's a very intelligent guy. I think nobody can argue that point. But he does something that I find insufferable, is that he has his opinion, and then he goes, where it seems like at least, like he works backwards to validate that opinion.
Right, right, right.
Like, he's like, I feel this way about this subject. And he's like, now let's go get the data.
I've cultivated all these facts to back
to back it up. Right, it's right. Like, okay.
I feel the same way about Bill Maher in a lot of ways.
You're just... And like, if what you can find the evidence to support what you're saying, like I get that, but it seems like your opinion came first, you know. And
you know what they say: 97% of statistics can be manipulated to show whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyways, but that's my
also 48% of statistics are brought completely out of my asshole.
Yeah, they are. What else is in there?
Sometimes you get two thumbs
two
in there.
Two thumbs in there, like the may think, but you may need to take a shower. Other than that, though, I really haven't been watching much. I've just been really busy. A lot happening off the field, as it were.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I have been watching some American Dad recently, which we don't always talk about everything we're watching because some of it is just so routine for me.
Sure.
You can bet money that if I'm falling asleep at night, I put a cartoon on to fall asleep to. If it's a new only because it's something I know. If it's something that I've not seen, I will stay up there with one eye open, seeing how it plays out.
Yep.
So it's got to be mindless enough to drown out some of the noise, but then also I can't be invested in it. And so oftentimes that's cartoons that I've seen a million times. You know?
But see, I have the opposite problem to where I'll put on like a cartoon like Futurama or something to fall asleep to. And then it'll be the Amazonian episode where it's like, I got to stay awake for death for Snoo Snoo.
Yeah, yeah. No, I typically know it's coming. So, but either way, here or there.
Wait, say the line, Bart. He's going to do it. Here, hold on. Wait, say the line, Bart.
Yeah, yeah, I hear you. But yeah, so I've been watching a little bit of American Dad recently as I tip away into my slumbers. And usually I'm up desk scrolling on my phone, so I'll catch a couple episodes here and there. And that show I got to give credit to. They do something. This is a little bit of a walk to get where I'm going, so you're going to have to bear with me.
Okay.
Back in the early...
Take me there, son.
Take me there, son. Back in the early days of The Simpsons, when they're at the peak of their powers, I would say, it was the guy that was the executive producer of The Office, I forget, he was writing on it. Brad Bird, the director of The Incredibles, was directing on it. Conan O'Brien was a writer for it. And Conan O'Brien and that squad, they did something that was really imitated often. Well, The Simpsons alone have been imitated often. You know, you don't get to The Simpsons without the Flintstones, and you don't get damn near any one of the modern day shows that are very popular, like Family Guys, all that, without
it's benchmark. The Flintstones was the cartoon of its time. You know, Jetsons was the cartoon of its time.
Fat, alcoholic, kind of dumb husband, super hot wife, really caring, keeping the house together, kind of thing. Right. Anyways,
the married with children of it all. Kind of.
So anyways, what they would do, Conan O'Brien and that writing staff, is they would often write a part of a plot line, and I'll just use something as an example, all right? So bear with me. Homer has had a million jobs. So in this episode, let's say, he becomes a fireman at first.
Mm-hmm.
And at first, you would think, oh, the whole episode's going to be about him being a fireman. What Conan O'Brien so brilliantly did is they would take plot lines and then just throw them away. And they would go absolutely nowhere because the fireman segment would lead to him crashing through a roof of some celebrity. And then you're like, oh, well, now it's really about his journey with the celebrity.
Sure.
And it really had nothing to do with him being a fireman in the first place.
Sure, right, right.
And a lot of TV shows, whether it be Family Guy, where it's like, oh, Peter's going to... Peter has to become a pirate first in order for the parrot that he has to get injured, in order for them to go to the veterinarian's office, in order for Chris to fall in love with the veterinarian receptionist.
Sure.
And so it's
Homer,
a lot.
Homer goes to be a – it's like set up to lead into the story but then the actual lead up doesn't have anything to do with the story.
Like, whatsoever.
Like Homer goes to the rodeo and then ends up becoming a vegan. And then the whole story is about him becoming a vegan.
Right, know? Right. And Conan O'Brien and The Simpsons really popularized that, okay? And they do it in Family Guy. They do it in a lot of cartoons.
Sure.
It's a trend that you'll see. What I wanted to say was about American Dad. For those who don't know, they have a character on there. He's a space alien named Roger, mm-hmm. okay? Most of y'all probably know that. Now, Roger's, his thing is he has nothing to do all day. He's bored, and he's not allowed to go outside and just be an alien because, you know, he'll get arrested, and the main character, Stan, will get arrested. He'll blow the cover.
Right.
Yeah, the cover will be blown. So he's always putting on disguises, and he comes up with all these silly characters, you know, the Ricky Spanishes of the world. Right.
All he does is sit around and watch plays, movies, read books. So all he does is just like assimilate Earth culture and Earth entertainment.
And he's just bored also.
Right.
He's
right.
like, oh, I want
to. He's been on the planet since Roswell, basically.
Yeah, and so he wants to go play all the time. And that's really what he is. But he takes these characters he does very seriously.
Sure.
And American Dad has found a way to fast forward through that initial setup that we were talking about earlier with it being, oh, first Homer's going to be an astronaut, and then the astronaut is going to lead to him actually raising an ant farm or whatever, you know, whatever the hell it may be.
Right.
Fill in the blanks. What they do with Roger is they just often go, oh yeah, Roger is that person. So they don't have to set all up, oh, how did how did Homer become this? They just have a character that goes, well, Rogers has a character that is blank.
Sure.
Or if there's a plot device that they need, but they're like, oh my God, the house is haunted and we need an exorcist. Like, you can bet more than 9 out of 10 times it's just going to be Roger.
Right, right, right.
And so I found it.
The old priest and the new priest, and the old priest shows up, and it's, you know, like James Caan or something like that doing a voice. And then it's like, well, who's the young priest? Hello!
Yeah,
it's Roger.
Yeah, it's Roger.
It's just him in a costume, yeah.
They even make a joke about it often in the show where they're like, I know a guy that can find you cats or whatever, and one of the characters is like, it's just going to be you when we get there, isn't it? And he's like, no. And he gets there. Of course, it's like,
right, right.
And so I just found it interesting. I never really thought of it that way about the current trend of what was made so popular by The Simpsons got really turned on its ear by American Dad. Just
sure.
We have a character that can be the, what do you call it? The Sally.
Mary Sue.
Mary Sue
yeah. Or the Gary Stew. Yeah.
Like,
so in terms of, in most sitcoms, you would have the situation like, oh, well, I've got a gerbil guy. And
it's some guest star they're going to bring on.
It's some guest star or whatever. Yeah. Instead of doing the guest star, they just make the gerbil guy Roger.
Time and time again.
Who's just doing a new character, you know. And they literally address it in the show where they're like, Roger, it's like, my name is Gary Michaels Anderson, and I deal in gerbils.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's got a wig and a costume and, like, he won't respond to Roger, but if you call him Gary Michael Anderson the entire time, or like Mr. Gerbil or whatever that's his character.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about. It's a weird way to circumvent the well, I know a guy, as opposed to just being like, I am the guy.
Yeah, it's a foolproof plan every time with every episode because it is so ingrained in the character of, all right, well, who's he going to play this week? You know, and see, he's one of the more popular characters on the show, certainly. Shout out to Seth MacFarlane for having two smash hits cartoon running simultaneously. But I just always, I just wanted to take...
So we're just going to disregard the Cleveland show?
And the Hanna-Barbera's of the world.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. But
welcome to the Wacky Races.
Wacky Races is awesome. But I don't know, I just thought it was interesting. Like I said, that it's a really popular trend in cartoons that they do. And they can really, just like I said, hit the fast forward button through so much of it just to bring on.
Right.
And it's not like they are granted some huge benefit of like, oh, wow, we really painted ourselves into a corner there. It's cartoons. It's all silly.
Sure.
It just fast forwards the silliness. You're like, we can get into how this is going to affect the family much faster without having to. We don't need the setup.
We don't have to go have Stan and the family go meet a guy.
Yeah, or
it's just going to be Roger like, oh, well, I can help you out with that.
Yeah, or Stan gets a job doing blank. They can still do those things, and they often still do those things. I just was taking it a moment to appreciate, that was a nice little cheat code you did a character. So
it is kind of the Konami code.
Yeah. And so I've been kind of on an American Dad kick, and it's been I don't know why that dawned on me enough to share. Maybe I just watched too many damn cartoons. But, I was really proud of myself for realizing that, and I needed somebody to share it with. And thank God I have a platform that I can share my nonsense and takes on plot devices. So there you go.
I mean, how many times have I watched something and been like, oh my God, I just noticed that like Labyrinth is a story about puberty and growing up. And you were like, yeah, dude, that's the whole fucking point. I'm like, oh, well, yeah. I mean, it only took me 127 views to realize that. So, I mean, fuck me, right?
Michael, like, Michael Storm is always like, dance, magic, dance, anything. So
I just got lost in the COD piece. As soon as it was David Bowie's dick in my face, I was just like, this movie's amazing.
Hypnotizing, it does. But yeah, that's pretty much all I've been watching, man. I've been just watching the cartoons, watching some sports, and just been really, really busy otherwise. So I'm glad I got to chime in on some of your stuff you've been doing.
Oh, but you did tell me about... you watched a martial arts movie recently.
Monkey Man.
Yeah.
Dev Patel directed.
Which I want to see. So, like, if you don't want to talk about it, that's okay. Like, I would love to watch it and we can talk about
it. Well, we'll peek behind the curtain real quick. We do plan on talking about that. And we may get, hopefully, we get the Middle Duds to come in here and rap about it. Because he saw it as well. And it's a martial arts film. It's based in India. It's directed by, which really caught my attention, Dev Patel.
Yeah, from The Green Knight and
Slumdog Millionaire is the big one. Yeah. A lot of things. He's an incredibly talented actor. And I'll say this without spoiling, and you'll probably hear me say it again on the day, but just for those that have stuck with us thus far, there's a rapper, most people know him, his name's Kendrick Lamar.
Sure.
All right. Whether you like or hate him or like his music or anything like that.
I was always more of a Drake fan.
Yeah, I'm sure you were. I'm sure you were.
Wait a minute. Yeah. I don't know what I just agreed to.
Yeah, exactly. No, but whether you love or hate that guy or his music, whatever, the one thing you can tell about him is he was raised on a healthy appetite of good hip-hop.
Sure.
You can tell that Dev Patel was raised on a very healthy dose of, or had a healthy appetite for very good martial arts movies.
Sure,
and so it's very cool to watch him try to do some of the similar things, and there's some interesting things like, that...
piecemealing out all the choicest parts in terms of like, ooh, I like this cut. I like the way this was done.
I
hear what you're saying. I haven't seen it. I'm trying to pick up on what you're saying.
Yeah, but like, you can just, like I said, you can tell like with Kendrick, you'd be like, oh, he's been influenced. He's been like, listening to this for a long time before he even picked up the... And you can tell Dev Patel's been watching kung fu flicks for a long time before he ever picked up the camera and decided to go make one.
Sure.
And the whole movie, all the behind the scenes stuff, which we'll talk about, is a true love letter, which makes me like the movie more.
Sure.
So I did see that. We're going to talk about that. And I also saw Beetlejuice.
Wait. I'll say it again.
I can't. That's why I paused. But we're going to talk about that in the upcoming episode. So there's a little teaser for you.
We
give people time to catch up. So.
We definitely do have the spooky season spectacular coming up. We got that to look forward to. I got a couple of movies I can... talk about that have absolutely terrified me.
Well, we have teased it long enough. I think that is going to wrap it up for us, unless you got any pressing issues you want to talk about, man. You know, I love you. You know, I appreciate our time together, truly.
Yeah, for sure, man. For sure. I mean, kind of behind the scenes, man, this has been a really good just sit down and talk with you. I know that we've had a lot of weird cuts, and I hope I'm not peeling the curtain too back behind to show the Wizard of Oz, but it's been a good hang with you.
Likewise, brother.
It's been not just doing the podcast, but I've enjoyed your company.
Likewise, my friend. That's why we keep doing it, because we like to, hang out. It gives us a reason to rap about some things and have the common theme of something we've been watching, because I will be asking one way or the other.
I got nowhere else to go.
Well, on that note, I would recommend that you go watch a movie
and talk about it with somebody that you love.